Yeah, so thanks again to everyone that's read, helps us open the meeting. I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Big welcome to, huge welcome to any visitors with us tonight, and a massive welcome to any newcomers that might be in the room. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. We do have a speaker this evening. It does fall on me to introduce them. And yeah, I met this gentleman that's come to share with us tonight a couple of weeks ago. Only a couple of weeks ago, we got to talking after a meeting in New York and discovered we had a lot of people in common. There was a lot, we knew a lot of the same people. And in fact, I suspect our paths crossed in my early involvement with online recovery. And I know he was involved in that. I'm kind of hoping he might share about that, but that's kind of his story to share. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Jeffrey A, who's come along to share his experience, strength and hope with us tonight. Jeffrey is anything up to 40, 45 minutes, whatever he's comfortable with. So Jeffrey, the floor is yours. Please share with us. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. You can hear me okay?
We can indeed, sir.
I'm a recovering drug addict named Jeff, and I'm grateful to be here and clean today.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
Welcome.
It's been a long time since I've been in a Blue Jeans meeting. I think I remember Jay, if it's the same Jay. Steve is a new acquaintance, but I'm glad I'm here. Do my best. I'd be lucky if I make 15, but we'll do what I can. reaching back, yeah, I started using when I was about 7, the best of my knowledge, it was roughly around that time. I remember my father gave me cream de menthe on ice cream one night. And the next day I was in his liquor cabinet looking for the cream de menthe. And there was a vodka bottle right next to it. And I said, what the hell, why not? You know, and what would possess someone at that age to do something like that? You know, it just tells me that I had the disease, you know, and it was just waiting to happen. So I took a big swig out of the vodka bottle and got a good ass whipping the next day, I think it was. Tried to mix water with the alcohol. That didn't work too good. But my father was really unpredictable and violent, and I never knew when it would come. I really, you know, I say I grew up in an abusive household, and my brother tried to emulate him until one day I knocked him on his ass, and that was the end of that. You know, it was not a happy childhood by any means. Started stealing at a young age, you know, before I was 10. I used to go into my father's, sneak into my father's bedroom. And, you know, pull a 20 or so out of his pocket. And back then, you know, that was in the 50s. So, you know, $20 was a lot of money. I went to the candy store and got caught. But, you know, I mean, it's just scheming, scamming, lying, cheating right from day one. Hung around with all the wrong people later on. Got into all kinds of trouble, but by the grace of God, I'm here today. Yeah, I didn't use every day, and there was not a lot of drugs around where I was. I was brought up in a rural area in northern New York State. It was a, visitors, you know, can't think of the name of the word. Anyway, summertime, there was filled with people. You know, for some reason, the word skips me, so I'll slow it down and maybe it'll come. In the summertime, we had all kinds of people. They would come to visit to see the lake. I lived in a lake near the lake, and they would come to see the lake. It was a beautiful, beautiful area. They used to call it, I think they still do, the Queen of American Lakes. Vacation area, I don't know why I couldn't think of the word. We hung out on the streets when we were younger. And, you know, our main goal was try to get somebody to buy booze for us. We weren't always successful. Most of the time we weren't. But somehow, you know, we got it. And I remember sitting out on my backyard, and there was a big hill there that went down to the workers area. Man, I can't think of these words now. I mean, I'm 76 years old. I'm lucky I didn't even be able to speak. I've got some pretty difficult physical problems, which causes a lot of anxiety. But we sat on the bank anyway, and we drink beer and throw beer cans over the bank. And that was my life, get high and, as long as I could with what I could. I started leaving home when I was about 14. I wanted to be a cowboy, and there was a resort area near me that had riders and, cowboys and all that stuff. Dude Ranch, and I used to hang out at the Dude Ranches, and I wanted to be a cowboy, and I learned how to drink there. Cowboys drank, that's what they did. It was not a fun time when I look back at it, because I would go a day or two without eating because I wanted to be around people and be liked and be something that I really wasn't. And I would go home just when I was starving, and then, leave again until finally I got a job at a dude ranch as one of the hackers. And we hacked horses, we used to call it. We'd take people out for rides. And I learned again how to use. We had a guy that came up there during the summer, and he was a member of the Gilby's Gin Club, and I started drinking gin straight out of the bottle. I'm like 16, and I'm running the roads with some pretty vicious people, getting into trouble. I was very lucky, truthfully, that I didn't get caught. I did a lot of things when I was a kid that I'm not proud of, and later on, and I'm just lucky I didn't get caught. But the progression of disease is jails, institutions, and death. But eventually I ended up in jail institutions. I started going into institutions early on, in and out, in and out. And one time I was in, I was into, by the time I was in college, I started using drugs. Started out with marijuana, went to other stuff. And I had this guy that I was using with, and, it was like the Timothy Leary, Richard Alpert trip. He wanted to use drugs to find God. And I remember I told him one day, he said, "You got to come over tonight, And I was dealing at the time, too, so I could get pretty much anything I wanted. And we were just smoking dope, and it must have been laced with something, because all of a sudden, I went to real hallucination, and I looked at the guy, his face turned into the devil, and it scared the shit out of me. And he told me afterwards that I had this golden aura that appeared around my head, and that's all I needed to hear. I thought I was the second coming. And eventually went into a seizure, ended up in the psych ward. And my thinking was, well, where else would they put Jesus but in the psych ward to heal people, because everybody's sick there. I was out there, and they almost sent me to the state mental institution. I was lucky that I didn't. But that was my life, using, finding ways to get more. Many times I woke up in places and did not know how the hell I got there. One of them was inside a maximum security prison cell. I was in a psych ward. A guy was on a tremendous amount of methadone, and he detoxed me cold turkey. I was lucky I didn't die, but for 5-6 days, I didn't know where the hell I was. I remember going to my house to the back door. I couldn't get in, so I put my fist through the window. I found out later, from that point on, I was kind of out of it for about 5-6 days, and I woke up inside the maximum security cell. And I was really there only on a misdemeanor charge, but they didn't know what the hell to do with me. They said the psych ward wouldn't take me back, that I was too violent. And I'm not, normally a violent guy, but, juice me up, you never know what the hell happens. And My ex got an order of protection, kicked my ass out the door, and said, "Don't come back." That was saving grace. And, you know, there was a lot of times, you know, from my childhood on the things that I did. But, you know, that began really, that was saving grace for me, because eventually I ended up in a psych center through an overdose. And the psychiatrist walked up to me and looked me square in the eyes and told me I was a drug addict. That was the best diagnosis that he could have given me. It scared me, you know. I wanted to get something from him, and he made it clear that I wasn't getting anything. I thought psych drugs would make you high, you know, and I found out later that they didn't. You know, I didn't care. I got to take a drink of water here. So with that, he sent me to AA. And I remember my first meeting, I was sitting at the meeting and thinking about all these great things that I was going to share. You know, it was a meeting, went around, people went around, everyone around, and people shared. By the time it got to me, I could barely say my name. I was filled with fear. I didn't even know it. And that was really when I looked back and started getting into recovery and going through the steps. You know, I could see that fear ruled my life. You know, I ran from responsibility. I did not want to be responsible for anything. I wanted to be everything that I wasn't. I was a chameleon. And when I'd get around people just to be like that, you know, I'd try and be like them. I had no self-respect or dignity. I got a sponsor back then, got a home group, and he started taking me through the steps. He took me through pretty fast, and I remember asking him one time why he did that. He said he thought if he didn't, I would die. He was a tough sponsor. He was a street guy. You know, I identified with that because I was living on the streets off and on. And like I said, I left home at 14. I'd stay with my sisters, friends, whatever. Mostly my sisters, and, you know, running the roads and driving fast cars, motorcycles, whatever. So back to the AA, the home group that I got was good. I remember the name of the group was Bolton by the Books, and that's what they did it. They did it by the book. My sponsor was straightforward and, you know, didn't mince any words, and, you know, he didn't waste time getting right to the point when he needed to. I was in there for about... I started going to NA meetings back then as well. And of course, these are live meetings. Eventually I ended up picking up, you know, I could feel it coming, but the worst thing I did was keep my mouth shut. When I came back, I learned that a closed mouth does not get fed, and you got to get shit past your lips, you know, and that's what I do today. I woke up in ICU after a 30 plus day coma. It was an induced coma. I was beaten from head to foot. All my ribs were broken, both lungs collapsed, my pelvis crushed, and it was from a suicide attempt. I had no clue how the hell I got there again. I remember waking up with my leg up in the air with a rod through it, and where the freaking hell, yeah, I don't know what you're language stuff isn't here, but you know, where the fuck was I? I had no clue how I got there. I found out afterwards it was like a 50-50 chance of whether I would survive, and they told my family, if he wants to live, he'll survive. If he don't, kiss him goodbye. Apparently, I wanted to live, so it took a while. I wasn't finished, but eventually I got to a point where I was really dead from the neck up. You know, nothing interested me. I'd sit in front of the TV and just stare at it, and couldn't sleep well at night. And, you know, I was in the hospitals for over 4 months, and I had a lot of time to think. And I swore to God I would never do anything like that again. I knew what kind of fear and trouble that I put my family through. I scared the hell out of them. But yet, I was thinking, well, I'll go over to the convenience store, get a bottle of aspirin, and end it all. This is not life. So I walked over to the store. I was walking. I'm in a wheelchair permanently now. And I got a bottle. I was going to buy a bottle of aspirin. I just looked at it and I said, nah, I'm not going to do it. And I started walking back home. And all of a sudden, I got this moment of clarity. I had quit using that, but even though I had quit, I was still in a fog. And right after that came this spark of life. I wanted to live again, and I even wanted to play my guitar. I play guitar off and on. I called my former sponsor and asked him to take me to a meeting. This is a long version because I know you take time here. He said he had been, and he lived quite a ways away, and he suggested someone else. So I called her, and I started going back to meetings. It was different. You know, my ass had hit the ground hard enough that my ears popped open. I could hear things differently. I remember walking into the first NA meeting when I got back, and I felt like I was home, something I never felt in my life before. And it's a good thing that I felt that, because it really gave me, you know, the incentive to keep going. So, you know, I wanted more. I just kept going to meetings, not using it, going to meetings. And the biggest fear that I had back then was that I'd pick up again. And when I look back at it, I realized at one point that when I came back, I got the gift of the first three steps. I knew that if I picked up again, I was a dead man. You know, it was easy to see the unmanageability. And eventually I ended up in a wheelchair. You know, I couldn't walk well. You know, I knew that this program worked. When I was in AA and NA, I went to NA meetings. I got the best job I ever had. I was making really good money, you know, and life was good. You know, I actually provided college education by taking a job that I did. It was in a kind of an elite, small, private college, and you know, it was very well known, and if they could get into the college, I provided an education for my kids. So just by, you know, just by getting the job. And that's where the suicide attempt happened. These people were great to me. They kept my job open for, it was about 7-8 months, paid me full pay and benefits, and they wanted me back. And I wanted to go back, but I was still using. So when I got back, you know, just after a while, I just said, "Ah, fuck this." I got a disability. You know, the disability was attractive. You know, it's a short route again. That's again when I ended up, after a while, going to the convenience store. But when I came back, as I said, something was different. I could hear things differently. I felt differently. I felt the power here in the rooms. Yeah, it was amazing. Something I never felt before. And I feel that when I'm in NA meetings now, every time I'm in a meeting. Steve asked me to share a little bit what happened, you know, online with my experience. I was clean for a little over a year, and I had developed a disease called RSD, reflex sympathetic dystrophy. It's a degeneration of the peripheral nerves, and that was slowly taking the ability to walk away. And eventually I couldn't. And I was in a wheelchair full time. And I said, I couldn't get to in-person meetings anymore. And being that I was in IT, I started looking online, and I found a group called Earth Group. One of the first, I don't know, they said that, excuse me, they said that it was the first online group. I'm not sure if that was true. And then there was UKNA, you know, I found that. And eventually we did some guy came up with a website where we could talk. It didn't last long. And eventually started with Skype, doing Skype meetings. So, you know, as the web evolved, we were taking advantage of it. And it worked. You know, I'm clean over 20 years now. Most of my recovery has been online. I went from there to NA Live in the rooms, Kenny and RT. And I served there for as treasurer for several years, off and on. I was one of the first members of that group. And at that group, I met my present sponsor. Interesting enough, my first sponsor was named Bobby. He was from the Lower East Side. My present sponsor is named Bobby. He's from the Lower East Side, both tough guys. I had a couple in between that, you know, that came and went, but these guys didn't. My present sponsor now, unfortunately, is in a nursing home. And we don't talk as much as I like to because he doesn't feel well a lot. But most of the time when we talk, it's, I love you. You know, how you doing? I'm doing okay. You're doing okay. I love you. And he gave me a life back, you know, for the 20 some years I had my own business. I was successful in that business. You know, I did more in this chair than I've done out. I was a IT manager of a local town government for several years, and it's all because of this program. Eventually, my family came back through hard work, working the steps, you know, being responsible, being generous. I was able to give my grandkids what I could not give my own kids because of, you know, what the disease did to me. I tell you, I find it hard to sit in front of a screen when I don't see myself or see anybody else because I'm so used to being in Zoom meetings, so forgive me if I'm a little bit nervous here. But NA saved my life, as simple as that. I woke up here, I grew up here, and, you know, I maintain my recovery coming here online. It's been amazing to see how NA has developed over the years from chat meetings where we're typing. And I'm sure some people here remember that, to voice and eventually to video like we have now with Zoom and Live and so on. I met a lot of great people in this program. I was able to develop good relationships with people because of the my sponsorship. My own sponsor showing me how to be a friend to people, to practice unconditional love in all my relationships, and to accept people as they are. So, you know, life for me today is good. Eventually, I moved from upper New York State to Colorado because one of my daughters lives out here. I wake up in the morning and I have my coffee. I look out the window and I see the Rocky Mountains, snow-capped mountains. We have what they call a front range, where it's the area that I live. Mountains are 8,000 feet high. But right behind them is a snow-capped Rocky Mountains. It's just incredible. It's beautiful. I live in an apartment that's, you know, it's like a five-star hotel. You know, I was lucky to get in here. I'm able to live here today with my retirement. I live well. I don't have a lot of money, but I have extra money. You know, I got money in the bank. And life doesn't get much better than that. My kids are near me. My daughter's going to pick me up in another couple of weeks or so. I'm going to hang out with them for a day or so. And done that off and on. My family came back. My youngest daughter used to tell me that I was weird. You know, now she says she loves me and, you know, calls me. And, you know, it's just great to have your family back. So. I think I've shared about as much as I'm going to share, because it's been a kind of a hard one here for me. I'm not used to sitting in front of a blank screen. It's been a long time since I've done that. You know, it's usually a video thing, and I don't know, maybe I feel more comfortable with that. I don't know. But anyway, I'm grateful to be here, and I want to thank Steve for asking me to share today. It's always an honor when someone asks me to share. I will say that I do sponsor others, and I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor. And one of my sponsor actually goes back to one of the first people that started NA in New York City. You know, I often hear stories about them. So I'm really privileged to have people, you know, in my life that are clean and that have a strong recovery, and have shown me how to love, really. To me today, my higher power is about love. NA for me is about unconditional love. I do service. You know, I hear a lot of people talk about doing service and they don't do shit, you know, or they complain or whatever. And, you know, service, unfortunately, I don't know if that it's ever changed really over the years, but service usually boils down to a few people that are going to do it. And those are the winners. So I stick with the winners. And, you know, I think there's a lot of winners here, and I'm grateful to be here. And I'm grateful to be clean today. And that's about it for me. So thanks for letting me share. And again, Steve, thanks for asking me.